Welcome to another episode of Engineering Influence, a podcast by the American Council of Engineering Companies. I am joined this afternoon by Andy Knopf with Mead and Hunt. He is a chief information officer. He is someone who is deeply engaged and aware of the issues that and challenges that engineering firms are facing when it comes to technology, IT, data, cyber, all those issues. Last month at FITIC, we had a great presentation at that conference by a CTO out of Silicon Valley, and he started off his presentation by just saying to a room of engineers, whether you know it or not, you're a data company. And that really, I think, nailed that message home, that firms really have to be paying attention to not only what they have as in-house for IT, how they're handling that, and then the question of data, cybersecurity, and all those issues. So there's a lot here to kind of dig into, and Andy, I hope you can kind of shed some light onto it. Cyber is something that we were talking about before we went on air. That's a growing threat. No one really has their hands on it. From the perspective of the engineering industry, what are the big things that they have to be aware of when it comes to cybersecurity?
Well, with cyber, I mean, it's really a difficult... really difficult thing to really put your arms around because it's so big, you know. And you know, we're dealing with a lot of companies are coming to us now. A lot of clients saying, you know, you got to be 100% protected.
Yeah.
You know, everything has to be bulletproof. And the reality is it's almost impossible to be 100% bulletproof. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with a lot of struggle. It's like, how do we make our system so strong that we don't have to worry about that? And and unfortunately, the thing about it is it really ends up being the user, you know, and what they're doing to get into the systems. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a presentation the other day, and you know, I'm like, you know, everybody's got smart house. There's all these different things smart in your house. Well, it's so easy to get into your home routers or your home, you know, smart devices, Nest, you know, whatever you got plugged in. It's a really easy gateway to get in there. So you do whatever you can to fortify your office, but then you go home and you log in at home, and now you're on a very inexpensive $20 router, and you think you're secure, and you know that's the problem. You know, it's all these different devices, or you're in the airport, or you're in Wi-Fi in a restaurant. How do you secure that? How do you secure those people so they're making the right decisions and doing things correctly?
Yeah, that's a big issue because, you know, everybody talks about the explosion of connected devices and the Internet of Things and the Internet of Everything, that you're going to have sensors and potential hookups where you can, you know, you're going to be connecting to different networks that have very limited security. And while you could be secure in the office, the minute that you take that home and you start working and you start logging on, that's a big vulnerability. Are there any best practices that you recommend that employees follow if they're working remotely or if they're taking data with them on the road when they do actually log in?
Well, I mean, there's definitely protocols that we have. You know, like we have a direct access that we use that people get right into the system. You got to be careful about, you know, public Wi-Fi. You know, because there's a lot of bad ones out there. So we tell people about honeypots and, you know, being careful that it's actually a real you know, something you can go into when you're at an airport. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people doing fake hotspots. Make sure that you understand that it's the correct one. There's probably going to be some information they're going to give you that you got to check on that it's actually real. So it's really the education. I mean, we do a lot of education. You know, the phishing stuff, whatever it might be. I mean, we're constantly educating people, and it never stops. Mm-hmm. So we do the course, and then we do the course again, and then we do the course again.
Yeah, it's not I hate to say that you have to be almost paranoid about it, but it's that expectation that if you are in public and you have a mobile device or a computer and you're trying to attempt to log on to a network, you have to presuppose that there's somebody who's trying to take advantage of that access point. Yeah. And you always have to think that security first kind of message, that you know, even though you think you're 100% secure, you're probably not.
Yeah. And the education is really the big thing. I mean, we got to the point where we keep on educating, and we get about 98% of people that are following all the rules, but there's always that 2%. Mm-hmm. And some people it's higher, you know, it's 6 or 8%. But, I mean, there's always at least somebody. So you have to always be prepared for that one person that might be the problem. So, again, education, you can only educate as much as you can, but it's a constant.
Yeah.
It can never stop. You think you just do one class and they're good to go. And that goes for a lot of technology now. The technology is changing so fast now that if you're not doing the education, if you're not keeping up with the changes, you're losing out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think years ago it was, you'd see like an improvement on a program and then it'd be a couple of years and you'd see another improvement. Like Microsoft right now, the changes are happening weekly now.
Yeah.
You know, Windows 10 is updating all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be aware of those and you got to be aware of the security issues, whatever it might be. And it's tough to disseminate because people are really drinking from the fire hose mm-hmm. right now. I mean, it is difficult to take all that in, but you can't just stop doing the education and doing that.
Absolutely. That kind of ties into the second area, which is kind of the evolution of IT and the whole IT department and what firms used to have in-house to handle and manage their technology needs has changed greatly over a short period of time. Where are we now on really what a good IT department should be, and how is that evolving into the future?
Well, I think, I look at like even our department 10, 15 years ago, we were really heavy on system admins and doing a lot of the technical things, keeping servers up and going and guys working long hours and keeping all that stuff running. Well, now most of that's getting done either, someplace like an Azure or mm-hmm. AWS. A lot of those technologies are just doing everything. They're patching our servers right now. We're not patching servers. We don't have to worry about a server going down because we lose power, we do anything else. That stuff is being out there and it's redundant. So our department's changing more from a technical department more to, I would say, more help desk, area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're hiring a lot more people to be able to just do that helping.
Yeah.
Get the people that understand what they're doing, but then make sure that you're making that end user, make them happy.
Yeah.
And, I look at, like, our department and how things are changing and where we rated years ago compared to now. We did a company survey mm-hmm. and probably 6 years ago when we did it, we were rated a little bit lower because we didn't maybe work so much on the customer aspect of it and keeping, everybody that works for us happy.
Yeah.
And this last year we did a survey and we rated one of the highest in the entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we are doing more, to help people out.
Yeah. So it's as things move to the cloud, as things move to third parties and they're hosting and actually doing the actual technical aspect of managing the servers and running the shop, you can kind of free yourself to be more of a user experience and customer care kind of centric model, which is a good way of hopefully getting more people included and involved and taking advantage of those education sessions and all those things to increase security.
Yeah.
One of the other trends that we mentioned was data, and storage. And the fact that as technology is pushing more things into digital, as you now have digital twins, you have a lot of data requirements here and a lot of storage requirements. How are you addressing those challenges as you have to have more information put onto storage and the issues that come along with that? It's file retention, it's compliance. It's more than just getting disk space now. It's a question of legal compliance, FCPA stuff for international. You have your domestic laws. So what are some of the challenges that you're facing?
Well, it's a little bit easier than it was in the old day because we have everything up in Azure right now.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have to just keep our file servers and keep on adding spindles, and it was always that that push and pull type deal where how long do I need this much space? And now I got to put in more disk space. So at least that's gone away. But now it's what do you do with those files? How long do you got to keep them available? And, when do you archive the files? So there's some new technologies that are coming out right now that you can actually set some date parameters where it'll go into that cheaper storage and still mm-hmm. keep it available. So that's really important. When I look at our data, We have over 100 terabyte of data is like what I consider our primary storage that we have. We have archive too, but that's really our primary. But if you look at that, 85% of that data is 2 years older or older. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, only 15% is stuff that we worked on in the last 2 years. But it's difficult. When somebody needs to get a file, they want to be able to pull it back, well, you know, however old that is. And we're a 119-year-old company, so we have clients that are 100 years old. And project's been, you know, building was built 40 years ago.
Yeah, well, you got to dig back into those files.
You have to dig back to those files, and you got to be able to retrieve them very quickly and get them back up and going. So, I mean, we're pretty good at it. We're not experts at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the difficulty I think that everybody's dealing with right now is it's the LiDAR data. It's that big data. What do you do when you're shooting an airport or a bridge or whatever it might be, and all of a sudden they come back and you're like, hey, I got 5 terabytes that I got to drop on the server. What do you do with that? You know, because 5 terabytes, we went 20 years not having 5 terabytes. Now someone can go in an afternoon and they can bring back 5 terabytes and they can drop it on you. So it's a struggle.
How about cost? Because, I mean, to an extent, storage space has gotten cheaper over time.
Yes. Yep.
But when you're talking about large-scale storage, it's not the same kind of break in price that you've seen in, like, you know, consumer products.
Yeah. I mean, the storage isn't that bad. Yeah. When I look at what we spend on storage, it's really very small. I mean, compute is still king, and video is even worse. So you got video is your most expensive, then you have compute, and then you have storage. Mm-hmm. So if I look at my bills right now, I spend the most on that GPU time.
Yeah.
You know, so those designers, they're doing whatever they're doing. That's my big dollar amount. So I'm not as concerned about storage, but it's, you know, what do you do? I don't necessarily have the answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much say, you know, within reason, we got to let it go. And we know when there's some stuff that can get archived, and we got to be cognizant of that and be able to archive it. But I'm really looking forward to the day, and it's coming pretty soon, that, you know, like we use a Panzura device, they're going to have in this next version that's going to be able to self-archive, and we'll be able to set parameters on it and let it go to a cheaper, like a Glacier or, you know, something cheaper storage. And that at the end of the day, that's what you want. You want to go off that expensive spindle and then go to that cheaper spindle storage.
Exactly. I guess from the conference perspective, how have you found, the conference so far? This year for kind of your field and technology?
Well, this year, unfortunately, the CIO track kind of dropped off a little bit on the fall. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we definitely need to do something to revamp that and get it going. We have a forum that we do, and that went really well. That was in Denver a couple of weeks ago, and I think we had about 120 people, and I think it was somewhere around 98 different companies attended that forum. That was very informational. That went really well. We do true roundtables, you know, where people have a list of what they want to know, and then we kind of vote on this topic, and then we just run through those topics. And that's where you really get a lot of the, you know, you get a lot of input from everybody, and then you see different sides of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, that's something I think we need to have come to this forum a little bit more. And it's not their right night right now.
It's just something we need to build on, because I mean, this is the thing. It's as technology is only getting more complex. The demands on archiving, on security, are only getting harder to really just follow. So it's in no way going away as an issue. It's just growing in prominence. So that's something which we'll take into consideration into the next conferences, because I think that one statement, if you don't know it yet, if you don't want to recognize that you're a data company, I think was kind of a shock to a lot of people, because they're traditional engineers. They do a lot of things, and they know that everything's moved on to, you know, the computer or you know, they're doing things in AR or VR and but the fact is, everything now is either cloud or it's offsite, and we got to spend more time focusing on how to stay current with the technology.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more firms that are cloud first. I mean, they're moving towards that. I mean, we went we progressed. You know, we were more hybrid, and now it's definitely, if we have it, it's going to the cloud.
Yeah.
There isn't even a question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very few things that don't run in the cloud. I mean, we just don't even know what that is. There's some things that cost more running in the cloud. You know, your SQL databases are still very expensive. Indexing servers, whatever it may be, that's still going to be quite expensive. But generally, your license servers, you know, whatever it might be, your phone systems, that stuff runs very well, and it's not using a lot of compute, and it's very inexpensive. And when you think about it, you know, for us, we got 900 people right now. If we don't have access to those license servers, you know, we're dead in the water.
Exactly.
We can't have people not be able to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even an option anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a lot of good information, good conversation. Andy, really appreciate you taking the time today to speak, and hope to see you out at the next conference, and hopefully also in May, or actually April this year,
April,
in D.C. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot.